Good to see each one of you that's here. Sometimes it seems like when the Lord gives me inspiration, He gives me a title, and then I got a maybe a thought, and seems like then it's my job to try to support that. I don't know. That may not sounded right, but anyway, that's the way it seems like. Sometimes there's this overpowering inspirational thought, might be the title that we put on the board sometimes. This morning I have a story that I want us to consider in the Old Testament. It's in 1 Kings. And I don't have a title. I don't know what you'd call this message this morning. Maybe you all can help me with that before we're done. So we'll give a little background to the story that I want to hone in the 1 Kings. We know that Samuel was the one that anointed the first king of Israel, and he was greatly troubled that the Israelites wanted a king. And God had told him that the Israelites weren't rejecting Samuel, they were rejecting him. They were rejecting the God as their supreme ruler. And Samuel was commissioned to do what the people wanted. So he anointed Saul, and then he anointed David. And we know that David was a man, the scripture says, after God's own heart. And he was the king that unified all of the tribes of Israel, all 12 tribes, more effectively than Saul had. And his kingdom was established to the point that God said, there won't be a ruler depart from your lineage until Christ come. I'm paraphrasing some of that, but there was a promise there. Solomon came along, started out being the king over all 12 tribes. Magnificent introduction to being a king. He was humble. He expressed his need to the Lord. The Lord met him. It was there was so much glory in Solomon's the beginning of Solomon's reign that it's just hard for me to fathom what it would have been like on the day that the temple was dedicated and the glory filled that temple so much that they couldn't go about what they needed to do. They couldn't offer the sacrifices. There was just God's presence was so intense right at that time. But we know that Solomon didn't do everything to please the Lord. And at the end of his kingship, when he came to his pass the rule on to his son, that his son didn't start out very good. And his son caused the people to revolt. And because of the revolt, there was 10 of those 12 tribes that divided. And from then on, the Israelites were divided. It was the kingdom of Judah, which became known as the Jews, and there was the kingdom that was at Samaria, or the kingdom of Israel. And at this point, all of those that were recognized as their capital as Samaria were real Israelites. They were not the Samaritans of Jesus' time. That's maybe another story. They were full-blooded Israelites, if you will. And to some extent, they still knew about the old law. They still knew about the Pentateuch, the first 5 books of the Bible that Moses had compiled. And they knew they had probably a written copy of the law. But as a whole, they didn't follow it. They worshiped idols. They did all kinds of grievous things. And we're going to pick up the story in 1 Kings, the 6th chapter. And at this point in history, I just want us to notice how things were functioning a little bit. I hope I'm in the right chapter. Maybe I'm supposed to be in 2 Kings. I am supposed to be in 2 Kings. Sorry. It's 2 Kings, the 6th chapter. Begin reading in the first verse a little bit. It says, "And the sons of the prophets said unto Elisha," you remember who Elisha was? Elisha is the one that asked for a double portion of Elijah's spirit. You remember that? And he followed Elijah until he saw Elijah being taken up in a chariot of fire. And Elijah's mantle fell to the ground, and Elisha picked that up. I'm just trying to give us a lot of background this morning. And Elisha became the prophet, the recognized spiritual leader among the Israelites at that point. So this same Elisha says, "The sons of the prophets said to Elisha, 'Behold, now the place where we dwell with thee is too straight for us. Let us go, we pray thee, into Jordan, and take thence every man a beam, and let us make us a place there where we may dwell.' And he answered, 'Go ye.'" So the situation here is that they said it was too straight. We might say it's too small. We need more room. So they said, "Let us go down to Jordan and make another place." So he said, "Go." And he said, and one said, "Be content, I pray thee, and go with thy servants." And he answered, "I will go." So he went with them, and when they come to Jordan, they cut down wood. And as one was felling a beam, the axe head fell into the water, and he cried and said, "Alas, master, for it was borrowed." And the man of God said, "Where fell it?" And he shewed him the place, and he cut down a stick and cast it thither, and the iron did swim. "Therefore," said he, "take it up to thee." And he put out his hand and took it. So at this point, what would be your perception of God, of Elijah's or Elisha's connection with God? Pretty solid, isn't it? I mean, any man that has a good enough connection with the Lord to make an axe head swim, I don't care if it's rock or steel, I'm pretty sure it was iron, make it swim, because he was in connection with God. That's what made it, what made this happen. I'm going to tell you, that's a pretty solid connection. So the presence of God is real. All right? The next verse says, "Then the king of Syria warred against Israel and took counsel with his servants, saying, 'In such and such a place shall be my camp.' And the man of God, which was Elisha, sent unto the king of Israel, saying, 'Beware that thou pass not such a place, for thither the Assyrians are come down.' And the king of Israel sent to the place where the man of God told him and warned him, and saved himself there not once nor twice." So how many times was it? More than two times. Maybe three, maybe four times. To the point that the king of Syria, if you read the next verse, the king of Syria says, "Which one of y'all is telling my secrets? Which one of y'all are telling the king of Israel where we're going to ambush them at?" And he said, they said, "We're not. But there's a God up in heaven that hears what you're dreaming about, and he tells Elisha, and Elisha tells the king, and then the king knows how to avoid your tactics. It wasn't that they weren't shrewd military people. They were. It's just that if somebody was behind the scenes and able to tell the enemy what you was fixing to do, you would never accomplish, no matter how expert you were in war, you was in warfare, you would never accomplish that, right? So they said, it's not any of us. The God of heaven, I'm paraphrasing, the God of heaven is telling Elisha, and Elisha is telling the king of Israel, that's why you can't ever engage in combat with him. So he said, go get him. So they got horses, chariots, soldiers, and they went to get Elisha. And they come in the middle of the night. And they come down to there, to Elisha's place, and Elisha's servant, or the man that was stayed with him, said, oh, alas, what shall we do? We're in trouble now. Here comes the enemy. They know how this is happening. They know you're telling on them. And I believe that's where Elisha said, Lord, open my servant's eyes. And he was able to see the hills full of chariots, not just plain old chariots, but chariots of fire. He strengthened his courage. And these men that come to get Elisha, all of a sudden they went blind. What do you know? And the Lord said, Elisha said, I'm really not the man that you want to see. Come with me, I'll take you. And he took him right in to the king of Israel, right up there in his courtyard. And then he said, Lord, open their eyes. Now, I'm telling all of this, so I'm not reading it all. You can read the rest of this chapter and find this all out. To tell you how real God's power and his presence was. Elisha was in connection with the Lord. There is no doubt in my mind, and there shouldn't be any doubt in any of our minds today, that Elisha had a good, solid connection with the Lord. But he was operating in an environment that was not conducive to have the connection that he had. Does that sound familiar? You can have a connection with the Lord and everybody around you. The Syrians were the last people on earth that was going to be in touch with the God of heaven. The Israelites should have been, but weren't. Even the king wasn't. And if we read on down, we find that what ended up happening was those men that were led in there to the king of Israel were fed and sent home. The king of Israel first wanted to kill them, but Elisha said, don't do that. Feed them, send them home. So they went home, and they all went home then. They quit trying to fight. But later on, the king of Syria says in the 24th verse, said, then it came to pass, 6th chapter, 2 Kings, 24th verse, came to pass after this that Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, gathered all his hosts and went up and besieged Samaria. Now this is where the king of Israel was. What does it mean to besiege? He camped around it to where people couldn't go out and they couldn't come in. And he encircled that city, and it got bad in there. It says in the 25th verse, and there was a great famine in Samaria, and behold, they besieged it until an ass's head was sold for 40 pieces of silver and a fourth part of a cab of dove's dung for 5 pieces of silver. Now, these are things that this dove's dung is most likely not referring to what it sounds like, but to something that looked kind of like that. Doesn't sound palatable, does it? I think the reason it was referred to as such was because people didn't, it wasn't their favorite food. And a donkey's head, the Israelites weren't even supposed to eat donkeys. That was an unclean animal. for the Israelites. But a donkey's head was selling for 40 pieces of silver. Now, if you're going to butcher an animal, don't give me the head. I mean, we want to eat something else. I mean, a leg or something is a lot more edible. Don't give me the head. They were it's a desperate situation, okay? That's the reason we have this account, is because Samaria had been besieged to the point that they were in a terrible situation. There was even an account in there where a child was eaten. That's awful. The 7th chapter. It says, well, and Elisha said, well, I'm going to read some more in the 6th chapter, I think it was. Oh, no, it's the 7th chapter. Then Elisha, 7:1. Then Elisha said, hear ye the word of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord, tomorrow about this time shall a measure of fine flour be sold for a shekel, and 2 measures of barley for a shekel in the gates of Samaria. Now, we just said that the conditions were so bad that things that people wouldn't normally eat and things that people shouldn't eat by the law were being sold at high prices because food was in such high demand. And now Elisha says, hear something from the Lord, the God that you should be serving and you're not. Tomorrow, about this time, there'll be flour and barley sold for, there'll be so much of it, the price will just be for pennies. That's what a shekel is. Compared to pieces of silver to a shekel, we're talking about $100 bills to pennies. Okay? It's just a dramatic change in price. Then a lord or a ruler in whose hand the king leaned answered the man of God and said, behold, if the Lord would make windows in heaven, might this thing be? How in the world is this going to happen? There's nothing to eat in this town. And you say tomorrow food's going to be so plentiful that it'll be at bargain prices. And he said, behold, thou shalt see it with thine eyes, but shall not eat thereof. Well, ultimately, this man that said, how can this thing be? He was able to witness it, but because of the stampede to get the cheap food, he was trampled. That's how this was a prophecy of him being killed. Now, this is where I want us to really start paying attention. I read all of that and told you all of that to try to help you understand how desperate their situation was, how difficult it was to survive. You ever had those places in life where it felt like you couldn't hardly put one foot in front of another? Discouragement, disappointment, rejection, adversity. There's all kinds of things that can happen to us in life where we feel like life's not hardly worth the living. And that's where these people were. A whole city of them. Not just one person, but a whole city of them. I mean, it's not even against New Testament law for me to eat donkey, but to eat donkey and a donkey's head, I'm going to tell you, I'm not that hungry yet. I'm just not. And I hope that I don't ever get that hungry. But I want to do some things now that'll keep me from getting that hungry. I want to be pleasing to the Lord. And if I find myself in that place, I want us to realize that the power of God was not diminished by the besieging of Samaria. Samaria wasn't pleasing the Lord anyhow. The Lord could have said, Y'all are not even where you ought to be. But he didn't do that. I want us to pay attention to the next few verses. It says, and there were four leprous men at the entering in of the gate, and they said one to another, why sit we here until we die? They were at the gate on the outside of Samaria, hoping that something would be shared with them so they could eat. But there wasn't enough for the stuff for the people inside. I believe they were Israelites that used to live inside the city until they became leprous, but they had to go outside the city. It says, if we say we will enter into the city, then the famine is in the city, we shall die there. And if we sit here, we die also. They don't have anything to share with us. Now therefore, come and let us fall into the host of the Syrians. If they save us alive, we shall live. And if they kill us, we shall but die. Now we can see the logic here, but none of us want to be in that place, do we? I don't want to be in a place that the worst they could do is kill me. But that's where they were. They didn't have a lot to live for, did they? And I know we can be there too. We can be in a place where we don't feel like we have a lot to live for. In verse 5 it says, and they rose up in the twilight. This was as the sun was going down. It's at the end of the day. The sun's maybe, you know how it is. The sun, you can see the sun and then it drops over the horizon and then it starts to get dark in the latitude that we live in. And as the sunlight was disappearing and as the shadows were getting longer, it says, they rose up in the twilight to go into the camp of the Syrians. And when they were come to the uttermost or the outskirts of it, part of the camp of Assyria, behold, there was no man there. There wasn't nobody in the camp. This was the enemy. For the Lord had made the host of the Assyrians to hear a noise of chariots and a noise of the horses, even the noise of a great host. And they said to one another, lo, the king of Israel hath hired against us the kings of the Hittites and the kings of the Egyptians to come upon us. Wherefore they arose and fled in the twilight and left their tents and their horses and their asses, even the camp as it was, and fled for their life. So the enemy had left because the Lord, the miraculous, just like the axe head swimming, the Lord caused the enemy to hear a mighty army. You ever hear something in a dream maybe? It wasn't real. I don't know what these folks were all dreaming the same dream, or at least enough of them dreamed the dream that they told everybody else, and they all got afraid and they took off running for their life and just left it all. And when these lepers came to the uttermost parts of the camp, they went into one tent and did eat and drink and carried thence silver and gold and raiment and went and hid it and came again. So they thought, well, we'll go back. We'll see if there's anybody in the next tent. So they went in again and entered into another tent and carried thence also, didn't eat this time because they were full, but they carried out some treasures out of that tent and went hid it. And then said one to another, this is where I want us to pay attention. They were still lepers, right? They got their belly full. And it looked like they could have went from tent to tent all night collecting treasures. But listen what they did. Then said they one to another, we do not well. This day is a day of good tidings, and we hold our peace. We hadn't told anybody yet. If we tarry till the morning light, some mischief will come upon us. Now therefore come, that we may go and tell the king's household. We need the people that was inside the city were some of their family. They were Israelites, you see. We need for us to keep our peace, for us to not tell this, that's not good. We need to go tell the people. Has any of their circumstances changed? I just want us to pay attention how this story. Nothing's changed, right? They're still lepers. They got a full belly. They got a pocket full of money that they found in the enemy's tent. It says, so they came and called unto the porter of the city, somebody that would be a messenger. And they told them, saying, we come to the camp of the Syrians, and behold, there was no man there, save the voice of a man, neither the voice of a man, but horses tied and asses tied in the tents as they were. They're just empty. All the tents are there, their livestock is there, but none of the enemy is there. And he called the porters, and they told it to the king's house within. And the king arose in the night and said unto his servants, oh, be careful. This is a trick. They're hiding out there in the dark somewheres, and they're going to wait for us to come out, and they're going to kill us. So they said, well, let's send some men out to check this. So they did. And they took, 14th verse, and they took therefore two chariot horses, and the king sent after the host of the Syrians, saying, go and see. And they went after them unto Jordan, from Samaria to Jordan. If you pull that up on the map, that was quite a ways. I don't know how long it took them to travel that, but I'm going to say a good part of the night, maybe longer, on a horse. They went after them unto Jordan, and lo, all the way was full of garments and vessels, which the Syrian had cast away in their haste, and the messengers returned and told the king. You know, you think about what would you grab and run out of the house if somebody said, the house is on fire. What would you do? I'm sure you'd grab something. I would, and run out with it. But if you get outside and somebody said, the yard's on fire, and you just kept running and running, and pretty soon you're probably going to lay down whatever you're carrying, and you're going to run for all you're worth. And the Syrians did the same thing. They heard this noise. It sounds like an army, a big army is coming after us, and we're not going to be able to to overpower the Israelites after all. So they took off running, and they grabbed something and took it with them. They didn't feel like they had time to saddle up their horses. They just took off. And as they was running, I think the sound of the enemy pursuing them got louder and louder and louder till they just laid down the stuff. And I can just see in my mind, I can see this picture. You could track those Syrians all the way home, because all the way to the river, somebody says, forget this, I'm not carrying this big thing that was so, and they just dropped things along the way. And their Lord had delivered who? The Israelites that weren't even, bless their hearts, they weren't even living right. It was the Lord's mercy. It was the Lord's mercy on the Israelites. And we have four lepers that alerted them about this. And so it says in verse 16, we'll get back on the story here, and the people went out and spoiled the tents of Syrians, so a measure of fine flour was sold for a shekel, and two measures of barley for a shekel, according to the word of the Lord. Food was plentiful and it was cheap. Again, because what? Because the Lord delivered them, and because four men were faithful. Now you can read the rest of the chapter, and you can read the next chapter, and you can read the next chapter, and I never find in there where four leprous men were healed because of their righteous decision to do what was right. I don't hear that. I would like to think that because these men did what was right, God took their leprosy away. That's what I'd like to think. But we don't have any record of that. And I would like to tell somebody that has met, you think about it. You're leprous. You're depending on scraps being thrown over the wall, basically. Getting leftovers of leftovers is what you're depending on. And you're not getting that because they don't have any leftovers. And you're between a rock wall and a hard place. That means the Syrians out there. And yet you're faced with doing the right thing. Life seems like it's not fair more times than it is fair. And they were faced with doing the right thing at the right time. The beauty of this story that I see, there's several things. One, God is a merciful God. He had mercy on the Israelites. He had mercy on the lepers. He fulfilled the prophecy that Elisha, the man of God, had that food would be cheap again. I see four men, and although they were afflicted, like none of us want to be afflicted, was something that their condition doesn't typically get better. But these men said, we do not good to hold our peace. This is not the right thing to do, to consume this on our own selves. We need to tell the king, there is food out here that's going to go to waste. They could not eat all of the food that was in all of those tents. They could have worked, just the two of them, they could have worked all night long at gathering up the gold and silver, and when they were done in the morning, they would have been completely exhausted and they wouldn't have got it all. There's too many of them. He said, we don't do good. We got to tell them. So they went and told the king through a messenger. The king done his due diligence to verify that there was no ambushment. Remember, this was the same group of people that had been trying to ambush him more than two times. We read that to you. And the Lord had mercy on them multiple times. This is the same ones. And the king said, we've got to make sure they're not hiding in the dark. And they found their trail where they'd left all the way to Jericho. Or not to Jericho, all the way to Jordan. And the people of Israel, the Samaritans at that time, the 10 tribes that had rejected God, God had mercy on them and blessed them with a deliverance we'd say they didn't really deserve. I want us to think about our own selves today. And I want us to realize that the power of God is real. It's real to save to the uttermost. Today, in the age that we live in, just like it was in the days of the midst of any kind of revival that's ever been, in the days of, you think about the day of Pentecost where Peter stood up and preached and 3,000 people got saved, and you know, there were some of those people that may have not heard everything Peter said in that message, but because the Spirit of God was moving in that place, they were moved too. Down through time, there's been places in time where it was called by history a Great Awakening, a Second Great Awakening. We believe that the scripture teaches there was an evening light reformation that came about a little over 100 years ago, 140 years ago now, in this nation. And there was a lot of people impacted. But it doesn't matter what time you're living in. We can be living in a time just like this, and the power of God is just as real today as it was to Elisha. I believe he can change hearts and lives today for the better. The big challenge I get is, no matter how much I may be in a not ideal situation, I may be like one of those lepers, I want to be faithful to do the right thing, even if it don't change my status, even if it doesn't change me to non-leprous. You know what happens to lepers? You know what leprosy does ultimately? It'll take a man's life. But these men did the right thing. They did the honorable thing. They said to one another, we don't do well to keep this to ourselves, to hold our peace. We ought to tell somebody. We need to tell. You know, we may feel that we have so much trouble in our own mind, in our own life. I got so many problems that I can't help somebody else. I felt that way sometimes. I felt that I've had more than my fair share of troubles. Lord, how can I be prepared to help somebody? How can I have something that's inspirational for the congregation when I felt like I've been completely overwhelmed? Accusations. Sometimes it's in my own head. Sometimes it's things people say. We can have hurts. We can have injuries. But I want to be willing to do the right thing, even if I feel like I'm a leper. You understand what I'm saying? Even if I got my own set of problems, I want to do the right thing. And because they did the right thing, the whole city, the course of the city, was turned around. They went from paying high prices for the stuff that shouldn't even be having to eat, the food was plentiful, and it was cheap again. May the Lord help us, whatever our circumstances are here this morning. We have different experiences here today. Whatever our circumstances are, help us, Lord, to be faithful, to be like the lepers, be willing to do what's right, because it's right. I wish that we had some words, at least one verse stuck in there that said, and because they did the right thing, the lepers were made whole. I wish that verse was in there, but it's not. I like to think that they forgot to put it in there, and the most important thing is for us to get the message that they did the right thing with what they had to do it with. That's what I'd like to think. I'd like to think that these men lived a normal life through the course of the however long people lived at that time. I'd like to think that. But I don't know. I just know they did the right thing at the right time. And that's all I need to know, is I need to do the right thing right now. That's what they had. Another place the scripture says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. And that's what I want to do. I want to do what's right there at my hands, right at my fingertips. I want to be willing to do it instead of saying, well, you know, I've got all of this issues, so I can't be expected to do anything, even if I realize it's the right thing. You pray for me. I want to be faithful. Some of us here may have more troubles than others right now. But I want you to know the Lord is the same God. He was the same God for Elisha as He had been for Samuel. He was the same God that was there when He blessed, when Solomon dedicated the temple. His power was not diminished. The conditions all around was different. But He was the same God, and He's the same God for us today, no matter what our horizon looks like, because the devil wants us to just look at the horizon and not beyond that. You pray for me. I want to be faithful.